Hey, welcome to this weekend's episode of Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Big shout out to our show sponsors, Rightful Liberty Arms, Legacy Sports International, Battleborn Tree Service, and Shooting Performance Institute. This week, we're going to switch it up a little bit. I got a special guest in the studio. We'll call you a co-host, Aaron. One, David Catalano, has a bunch of time off saved up at work. So he is in Montana with a friend right now, and I had to do the Hail Mary 11th hour. Who wants to do the show with me? Aaron, if I screw up your last name, correct me. Aaron Linfante,
yep,
from Battleborn Bird Dogs is going to guest host with me today. For those of you that listen to the show, you've heard Aaron's name, heard the name of his business. I'm month two now. When did I get Fletch back?
Beginning of November, I think, man.
A month and change now. I've had Fletch, my setter that Aaron trained. You've got kind of a unique philosophy on training dogs, and I wanted to get you on the show to talk about some of the work you do with bird dogs in Nevada. Also, the unique approach you have, as we were just talking about. I got a well-trained house pet as well, which is awesome, because in the past, I've had high-octane field dogs that were great for like that singular myopic purpose.
Sure.
But we're slightly kind of a nightmare in the house. And with Fletch, he's just a well-rounded, easygoing bird dog. Before we get into that, though, introduce yourself a little bit.
My name's Aaron, right? I run Battleborn Bird Dogs. I train out of Washoe Valley.
Okay.
Which is between Reno and Carson City.
Yep.
I've lived there for about 11 years. Lots of BLM around down there. There's some state land down there. Lots of wild valley quail down there. I just like Washoe, so I just don't plan on leaving that place anytime soon.
How'd you get into training bird dogs?
So that's a good question. I think, like we were talking about before, it started with hunting. And when I was a teenager, I had some springers, and I really didn't know what I was doing with them, but I knew that they could hunt quail.
Okay.
And so I was like, well, I got to figure out how to train these dogs. And so I just kind of went around and asked everybody that I knew that was older than me how they got their dogs trained. And I just figured out who knew more than me. And I just attached myself to those people pretty much for a while.
Did you work for them, or was it?
Yeah. And in the, not like there was no bird dog outfit where I grew up as a teenager. It was just older men who had dogs that liked to hunt who sent their dogs off to get trained. And I was always curious about that. And when they came back, I just tried to find as many bird dog clubs as I could. And I just went out and, you know, when you start training a dog, you think it's this mystical kind of thing. You know, who does that? How do they do it? Where do they get birds? That's always like a big thing. Like, how do you get dogs on birds? And a bird dog club solves a lot of those issues. And I think when I was living in Missouri, I was going to, I was in a PhD program out there. I knew I wanted to train dogs. I loved it. I had a couple of my own dogs. I had lived in Nevada for a while, went to school here, and then went to Missouri. And I kind of fell in with a guy who ran a bunch of setters. His name was Larry Carpenter. He's passed away. And I think I said this before to a lot of my friends. Like, I probably spent way more time bird dog training with Larry than I was paying attention to my graduate studies at Mizzou. And I just loved it so much. And he taught me, like, a lot. And then I sort of figured out who was who of the bird dog world. I came back to Nevada because I live in Nevada. Got involved with the local clubs here. And then I was introduced from a friend of a friend to a guy named Bill Gibbons. And he has his own method of training, the Gibbons West method. And he is a prolific dog trainer for like the last 30 years. Probably not going to find a better dog trainer than Bill Gibbons. It was West, like in the pantheon of dog trainers, like Walker, there's West, and then there's Bill Gibbons. And so he lived in Arizona. And so I got to meet him and spend a lot of time with him at his house in Arizona with his wife. And then that time was kind of cut short. He passed away of cancer. But, you know, I just kind of took everything he taught me and I just sort of used that every day. And there was another guy, kind of an offshoot of Bill, same West Gibbons method. His name was Maurice Lindley, but he lived on the East Coast in South Carolina. And he and Bill were good friends and I got to meet him and a few other people, Martha Greenlee. They used to do these clinics on the East Coast all the time. And Mo actually passed away last year. He had a heart attack, I think. And so it just seems like there's just a few of us West Gibbons West trainers out here anymore, it seems like.
So I'm going to back up for a second. What's your PhD in?
So I dropped out of my PhD program 2 years into it, right before I took my qualifying exams. It was in Romance Languages and Literature. I speak a lot of languages. So
you kind of blew right past that one. You're like, yeah, I was working on my PhD, but dogs, what were you going to do with that? Teach? Or?
Yeah, I really did want to be a college professor. I liked teaching quite a bit.
Okay.
And I like literature a lot. I read a lot. And I really liked Spanish literature. And so I know it's kind of weird, but I did.
Okay.
And so I went to school for that and was pretty good at it. You know, I got my master's from UNR too. And then, I went out to Mizzou.
So you've been a dog trainer full time since college?
Yeah. Well, it's not full time. It's like 3/4 time.
Okay.
So I train dogs as much as I can. And then I have to go get a real job occasionally to go, you know, pay the bills.
Right, right.
And so, yeah, I train dogs all the time as much as I can.
Yeah.
And I also, I kind of like to do it on the down low. Like not a lot of people know about it. You know, not a lot of people know about me. Like you found out about it through a friend of a friend. And that's kind of how I like it. I think I could be, my outfit could be probably a lot bigger if I wanted it to be. But I sort of like just being able to take a few dogs at a time. I like interacting with the dogs. And like Fletch, for example, I had a pretty good relationship with Fletch. It was easy for me to bond with him. And I figured him out really quick. And he was in my house a lot with me. And I feel like if I have a lot of dogs, like they just don't, I can't have them in my house a lot. I like them in my house. Right. I like them with my family. I like hunting over them. I like figuring out their quirks. Yeah. I just like dogs.
You know, the places I've had dogs trained in the past,
sure,
it was definitely the bigger the dogs, they've got the massive kennel operation and everything, and dogs, they're not part of their family. Mm-hmm. They don't go inside. In fact, you even, kudos, you texted me throughout the whole process and you'd send me pictures of like Fletch on a bed in your house and everything. And it was like, oh man, this is a new, unique experience for me as a dog owner.
Well, I also understand, you know, you guys are giving me your dog. Yeah. It's a big deal. Some people, they don't care as much as others. Like they're just like, send it off to training. It's what they do.
Right.
I like to update people. I like them to see like, hey man, I know you're trusting me with your dog. It's in my house. You know, man of my word, it's on its bed. I'm teaching it how to be in the house. It's with my kids. Here are pictures of that too.
Yeah.
Here are pictures of us hunting. I just think it's super important because it's not magic what I do, but it just takes a lot of consistency. So I also think that I can teach you how to do it. And by me sharing those pictures and experiences with you, you sort of can figure out what I'm doing. And so when you and I hook up, you have questions for me about Fletch based on what you've seen. And I can say, remember when I seen this picture? Remember when we were in Montana and we were talking about how Fletch was just busting huns all day long or something like that, you know, and you can relate to that and we can sort of fine tune. You can kind of understand what I'm saying.
I'll call it a much more personalized touch in dog training because I had a list from you like, hey, here are his quirks. Mm-hmm. Here's what he's going to do. Here's what he likes. Here's what he's afraid of, et cetera, et cetera. Versus just, hey, here's what you owe us. Here's your dog back. Good luck. Godspeed. If you have any questions, feel free to get in touch. And then, you know, it goes to voicemail or whatever. Sure. And I'm not knocking. I don't want this to come across as knocking other dog trainers out there. But just for someone who's had bird dogs over the years and been to different trainers and everything, this was a breath of fresh air as far as having a dog trained and like, oh man, I'm getting pictures of my dog in a house. Like, here's what Aaron's noticing about my dog. Things that I'm not scratching my head about when I get the dog back and I'm out there hunting with him.
So I think one of the biggest reasons I like training dogs a lot is, one, I love dogs. But two, like, I want the hunting experience for you or for anyone else, I want it to be awesome.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I mean, I'm out there with my dogs and I think it's just amazing. Even when they mess up, you know, I still love being out there. And I want you to kind of get that. So I want that relationship between you and your dog to be enhanced by you giving it to me. Does that make sense? Like, I don't know how else to explain it. Like, I just want that experience of dog ownership for you to just be awesome. Like, no one likes a dog that doesn't perform. Right. I mean, it's just really frustrating. You spend so much time chucker hunting, for example, like we both chucker hunt a lot. Like, you spend so much time in scouting an area, getting out there, driving, and then you got to hike in. You know, you're looking for all this stuff, and then you just don't have a good experience over your dog. You're probably never going to want to go bird hunting again.
Yeah.
And that kind of breaks my heart a little bit because I love bird hunting and I want everyone to love bird hunting. And I really want people to love bird hunting over their dog.
I'll echo kind of, I'm a dog guy first,
sure,
a bird hunter second.
Yeah.
So I hunt with a lot of different people, take friends out and everything. And for me, the fun of it is watching the dog.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I want to get my birds, don't get me wrong, but there are more times that I will kind of sit back, and especially shooting a sub gauge. We'll get into guns and stuff we hunt with in a few, but I'll sit back and like let them blaze away and get their birds. I just want to watch my dogs work. That's a successful day for me. So I'm with you on that. I think the appeal is, oh, look at them figuring out this covey and like cutting them off. And oh, that's awesome. For me, that makes the day.
To echo that even more is when you go to a new place that you haven't been or you've seen it on Onyx.
Yeah.
And you want to go scout it. And you go and you look and it's new terrain for you and your dog. And then to watch your dog figure it out, you know, is so much fun. And then, you know, you figured it out too. You're like, well, there are birds here. And then I feel like that sort of leads to, well, I can take my dog anywhere. Like, we can just go scout my dog anywhere.
Absolutely agree. Do not go anywhere. We got to take a quick break. When we come back on Nevada Backcountry, more with Aaron from Battleborn Bird Dogs. We are back on Nevada Backcountry with Aaron from Battleborn Bird Dogs. We left off there talking about, I think we have that shared love of bird dogs, watching them work, and that appreciation that goes into watching a dog, watching the gears turn, watching them figure it out. And you talked about all the time and effort put into chukar hunting. I mean, for me personally, I'm not that great of a hunter. It takes me 3-4 trips to an area just to figure out how to hunt it. Mm-hmm. So there's, in addition to all the scouting, all the miles, everything else, you know, getting a dog back that knows how to figure out wild birds was awesome. I could cut that down to maybe 2 trips, but I'll go into an area and that first trip in there, I rarely, maybe I'll scratch out a bird or two, mm-hmm. but it's more that like letting the dog figure it out. And then in addition, me figuring out like, okay, I should probably, this is where they're roosting. I should probably be on this side of the canyon at first. There's so much of that. So getting a dog back from someone like you is awesome because they've been exposed to wild birds. They kind of know the program a little bit and it just shortens that learning curve where I don't have a ton of areas across the state, but for me to call it like a spot or an area, and for those listening, I'm making air quotes right now, it's got to consistently produce and I've got to have a system in place to actually hunt it. And the dog is the crucial part of that, figuring out how they work. So all my waxing philosophical aside, talk to me a little bit about your process. You got Fletch out to what, 3-4 different states?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
And that's for most of the dogs you train, correct?
Correct. So, well, not for the dogs I take in the spring. It's a little different program.
Okay. But that makes
sense. Yeah. For the dogs I take in the fall, I am able to hunt them on wild birds. Like we go to, I think I told you, we went to Montana, we went to Idaho, we went to Oregon, and we stayed here in Nevada.
Okay.
So he got a lot of exposure on a lot of different type of terrain, on a lot of different species of birds, which helped. We went to Oregon first. I think I texted you. We were sage grouse hunting. In Oregon, you draw tags for sage grouse. And it was rough. Right? I mean, he didn't figure it out.
Very matter of fact. Yeah.
But Bill Gibbons used to tell me, wild birds will teach a dog things that you'll never be able to.
Yeah.
And I adhere to that. I told you when we first started talking, I'm like, dude, wild birds, like you just need to get your dog out there and you know, we can figure it out. And so he figured out sage grouse. They were a big bird, you know.
What was rough about it at first?
He just really didn't know what he was looking for. You know, we'd go to spots and just kind of sort of ties into what you're talking about. Like he didn't know how to hunt an area. He didn't really know what he was looking for. He knew he smelt the birds, but he didn't know how close he'd get it to him. He didn't know how they were going to behave. It was just like a mixture of a lot of things. It was a little hot still, you know, because we were there in, I think it was September, we were looking for those things. So it was just a lot of things, but it was all good. I don't think anything, if a dog puts up a bird, that's never negative to me. So he'll always learn something like that. And then, so we kind of broke off from that. And then we went back to Nevada and we started hunting, you know, blue grouse up here, these city grouse. It was a little bit more of the same. They were a bigger bird. You know, they don't really hold well for points sometimes. And so they were running around. And so that, you know, always gets a dog kind of fired up when he sees a bigger bird running.
Yeah.
and then we rolled from that right into Montana. And now that was curious for me because while he couldn't produce a sharp tail, we kept putting him in areas where there were sharp tail. He did find hunts. And so like something was clicking for him to find hunts. And I couldn't really figure out what it was or what it was about hunts that he liked. But he liked hunt. Now, it was interesting to watch him try to figure out and point. At first, he didn't want to point at all. He just wanted to bust those coveys of hunts,
right, covey after
covey. But then towards the end, he started pointing him. He started figuring out like, man, you know, I smell these birds. Maybe I should stop.
Yeah.
You know, you could see the wheels turning. And I sent you pictures of him pointing birds. Like he would stop for just a couple seconds, long enough really for me to get a pic or a photo for you and kind of figure him out, watch what he did. And then he was in them again, you know, putting them up. And then we rolled from that kind of into the Boise area because it was chucker season. We didn't spend a lot of time there, but he did see some chucker there because there was a lot of people out there. It was kind of hot. I don't really enjoy hunting chucker when it's super hot like that. We came back to Nevada to get ready for the chucker opener. And then, I don't know, man, he just started putting it together like really quick. And so I think I sent you that video of us trailing that covey up the hill.
He stole point from one of the other dogs, I think.
But, you know, Milo is a much more cautious dog than Fletch was. And so we were at like 300 yards at the bottom of that hill. Milo was on point and she kind of cat stalks. And I knew they were moving. And Fletch came in. And so I was sort of curious to see what he'd do. So I just let him establish point. Then he pointed in front of Milo, kind of stole point. But then he started working the moving birds too, kind of cat-like. And I appreciate that. Like, it takes a smart dog to figure out that the birds are moving and not put them up. And so he got a lot of that. The couple times we took him, a few times we took him chucker hunting, he did that a lot. He did that really well. And then we worked those birds all the way to the top where he went on point. And that was a covey of like 16, 17 birds. And we knocked two down and we couldn't find the one. But we did recover one. And he did great. And ever since then, man, he's just hit the ground running.
Yeah.
Like he never looked back. And it's just the more experience you can get him on that, you know, he'll figure it out.
The one thing I noticed is he doesn't necessarily honor point, but he's figured out now over the month or so with me, a handful of outings and everything. It's like he gets curious. So if Dixie, my Brittany, goes on point, he'll stop and watch. Mm-hmm. He doesn't necessarily like back her point, but he's figured out like, oh, wait a second. She's up to something. I wonder what this is going to be. And then he'll do that, but he is a much more cautious bird dog than I'm used to. And I don't know if that's just experience with other dogs. I know you told me not to run them together at first to figure him out. So what I was doing was taking him out by himself, and then the afternoon we'd finish with Dixie. Well, finally this last weekend I ran them together, and he did great. She's been trained to back or honor a point, so she knows the program.
Sure.
And there are coveys he found that she would honor that point on. For the most part, he is still at that, like, probably, I mean, he's a year old. Mm-hmm. He's a puppy still. But he's got that thing now where I've watched in just a month and whatever, 6-7 outings, he's like, oh, she's on to something. Mm-hmm. I'm figuring this out. And I like watching that process.
So it's all about the foundation, right? And so in the Gibbons West kind of method, the bird is the thing that does the teaching. The bird is always teaching the dog what to do. And so like when you left him with me, you know, the foundation is super important. We did a lot of check cord work, a lot of kind of steadiness a little bit, as much as you can. But I don't want to oversteady a puppy. I want him to be excited and everything. And so that first month was just like check cord work to get him used to seeing birds, to hold him point. When he smells a bird, he's got a point. You know, you just establish that.
Okay.
And it all goes back to the foundation of that. And so you just are able to add on to that as he gets older. And so this year, let's just say he can back. Like he sees it. Dogs learn from other dogs. And so if he sees your dog back, and he'll figure it out. And so then we can roll into spring and, you know, we can work on more advanced bird dog stuff because he has just a solid foundation. And wild birds just has a huge part to play in that.
In that first segment, you mentioned getting involved in dog clubs or whatever. You're not talking about like the pay to play stuff them in Sage thing. You're talking about an actual like dog training club.
Yeah, the German Shorthaired Club of Reno is pretty prevalent here. They do training sessions on the weekends for people who just want to go out, and you know, it doesn't have to be a short hair. It can be whatever. I used to be pretty active in that club, and then one of my closest friends kind of moved away who was a big part of that club. So I'm not super active in it anymore. But they're a great resource. There's lots of people out there who hunt and who field trial their dogs and who train dogs on their own.
Do you do any of the field trial stuff?
I used to do quite a bit of field trialing. I used to do quite a bit of horseback trials. And then about 2018, I sold my horses and kind of got out of it. So when I started bird dog training, I thought, oh, I'm going to train all these field trial dogs. But ended up what happened was I got a lot of hunters.
Yeah.
And they're like, I don't want my dog to field trial. I just want him to find chucker. And I was like, okay, well, we can do that too. And so field trialing, like horseback trialing, takes up a lot of your time. And they have trials during the fall, which is always just kind of crazy to me because I would just much rather be hunting.
Right.
Than be on the back of a horse, you know, watching my dog run. So I kind of got out of it a little. Sometimes I'll go and I'll just enter a dog in a trial just because I want to see where it's at against other dogs.
Okay, that makes sense.
You know,
I
just kind of want to see what's out there. And I want to kind of, I miss some of my friends. I have a lot of friends that still trial heavily. And I get to see them and we get to catch up. And it's a fun opportunity for me. And then I, you know, beg one of my friends to let me on a horse again, you know, because I kind of miss that a little bit. And, you know, we'll ride around for a couple of days. But field trials is a good way to go. If you field trial, especially if you horseback trial, they are like the upper echelon of athletes. Those dogs are running hour braces on a horse. And so they are just putting miles down. And, you know, they got to find that bird, and you got to get off your horse, you got to flush it, you got to fire a blank, you know, you got to produce that bird. And so those dogs are, you know, the training is intense that you have to put into those dogs to get them that steady.
Right.
But it's also just one of the most amazing things you'll ever get to see. Of course, like there's nothing, you know, you see your dog out there like a mile. Yeah. And he's just way out there. And you have a scout, you know, kind of help you keep track of your dog a little bit. And so it's just fun.
We have got to take a quick break. Do not go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Hey, welcome back to Nevada Backcountry, 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. So over the break, Aaron and I got yakking about the, we'll call it the lay of the land this trucker season in Nevada. And you echoed what Dave and I have been saying, our friend group has been saying, mature birds this year.
Yeah.
Not a get lucky type of season, more of like put in the work and you'll turn up birds. I was saying, I've been kind of singing the blues like, oh man, I got this new dog and it's just tough. You made a great point. There's no better season to have a dog out there learning from wild birds, mature birds. Do you have dips in seasons with training dogs where it's like those years where birds are just really tough to come by? And how do you deal with that stuff as a trainer?
So this is going to sound a little weird, but I don't ever really have a problem finding birds. If I have a problem finding birds, it's because I'm not putting in the effort. Nevada is like just the best chucker state I think I've ever hunted. And if I'm not finding birds, it's because I'm not in the right spot. It's not because they're not there. And so I can never really put that on anybody except for myself. And that's just kind of how I look at it. And even in like the lean years, and I mean, I started chucker hunting like in 2002 when it was like you could throw a rock and hit like a covey of like 200. And then like around 2007, 2008, it started getting lean. I just had to put in more effort and go to different places.
Okay.
And find different places. I mean, I think I told my friends one time when I first started, like I had a gazetteer, you know, the Nevada gazetteer.
Yep.
And I used to have notes and sticky notes and that's how I figured out the deserts of Nevada and the mountain ranges too. It opened my eyes to how many mountain ranges there are in Nevada. And so I never let that kind of be a problem. I sort of thought maybe this year might be a little off just because of what everyone said, but I don't know. Like, for example, like when we went up to Montana, I had friends that had gone before me, you know, because the season opens in September, but I don't like to go to Montana until like October because it cools down significantly. Man, I can get a lot better dog work up there. And they're like, oh, the bird numbers suck. Don't come up here. But every day we were in Sharptails. I just think if you just put down a boot leather, man, you're going to find those birds. Now, those birds might be skittish. Like, you might not shoot a bird.
And smaller coveys. Yes. And yeah.
You might not be able to get close to those birds, but you will find birds. I promise. Like, if you put in the time and put in the scout and just hike, you're going
to
find birds.
I think back to, like, what was that big drought? 17?
Yeah.
When, like, the Truckee went dry. I had a hard time that year, and maybe that's my lack of hunting skills, but that was a thin year where it was, like, small coveys, getting up way out there, just, and at the time, I was hunting with I had a flushing dog.
Yeah, even harder.
Oh, my God. That year made me want to start going vertical with a razor blade. So, yeah, I'd agree with you. And I always, when I look at like the Nevada Chucker Hunters page on Facebook and people saying, hey, point me in the right direction. I don't think I've got a friend in my little chucker circle that didn't start the way I started, which was you had a gazetteer.
Yeah.
I used to buy that Guzzler book.
Yeah, you used to go to Endow to get those.
I'd get the Guzzler book, and I would just pick a mountain range, and I would hit every small game Guzzler. This has got water. This doesn't have water. I always tell people, hey, you want to get started in bird hunting, any of those roads at dead ends in a canyon, if there's a Guzzler back there, work that area. You'll figure it out. And I managed to get birds, so anybody can do it.
Yeah.
Back to Nevada specifically, do you turn dogs away?
I do.
You do. And for what?
So like when you had contacted me.
Yeah. Like when someone approaches you and you know, okay, this is a Nevada chucker guy. He's got this new dog.
Yep.
What do you look for our state specifically? And what do you turn dogs away for?
So let's just use you.
Okay.
Like I wanted to come see Fletch. That was like, I want to see your dog. And so I came to your house and I met him and I just want to see. And so really what I look for in a dog that I want to train is if I even like the dog.
Okay.
I mean,
Do we vibe, as the kids say?
Yeah, I mean, well, because the dog's going to be living with me. It's going to be with my kids. It's going to be with other dogs. There's a lot of things. Like, the temperament has to be right. And I've had dogs that I've taken in and bitten me.
Oh, okay.
And I've had to send home. I'm like, hey, your dog is like, you is not as advertised. You know, you got to come get this dog.
Yeah.
I've had dogs fight with other, you know, they're just aggressive. So I think being small, and it just allows me to turn people away. So what I look for is just if I vibe with the dog.
Right.
Like, do I get along with it? And then I just kind of watch how it interacts with you. Or sometimes I get people to bring the dog out in the field and I can put a bird out for it. I watch to see how birdy is it. Like, is it really going to take an enormous amount of effort for me? Like, is a dog just dumb and doesn't want to find birds, or is it just lacking experience?
Right.
Like, is it still looking, or is it just kind of given up and wants to play fetch? Like, for example, I had a dog a number of years ago as a GSP, and these people really wanted this dog to hunt. And I said, you know, we took it out and I evaluated it, and I just really didn't have a good feeling about it. And they were just very adamant about me taking this dog. So I said, all right, well, I'm just going to take it for a month, which I don't usually do. And I'm like, let me just see what I can do with it. And, you know, we'll just move on from there. So after the month was up, I had him meet me in a field, and I said, okay, watch this. Then I put a bird out for it, and it didn't find it. I said, can I watch this? And I threw a tennis ball out there.
Oh,
and that dog found the tennis ball like every time.
Yeah.
Like, it would just sniff on the ground for that ball. And I said, you know, this dog, no fault of the dog, but he's just not interested in birds. He just wants to find balls. And so I'm like, you're just wasting your money, you know, to continue having me train this dog. It's just not going to be worth it for you guys in the long run. And they were very appreciative of that. And you have to have those hard conversations sometimes with people. Also, I just look for kind of like the it factor. Like, is there something unique about this dog? Like, for Fletch, I could see he was really smart, but he was kind of wimpy. So
he's a soft dog.
Yeah, he was. And so I like training soft dogs. I'm pretty good at it. I understand them. And I like to figure out ways to motivate a soft dog to not be soft. Like, when he's out there, and you can speak to this, like, he's a machine when he's out there looking for birds.
Yes, yeah.
You know, like, but when I first got him, like, if a piece of sage, like, would poke him, he would yelp like he was going to die.
Yeah.
And so I was just like, man. Yeah. And now, you know, the dog that you have now is so much fun to be around. And, you know, I just look for dogs that I can do that with. And I don't shy away from a challenge. If there's a dog that I think, you know, that's hard-headed and everything, yeah, I'm all for that. I can figure that dog out too. But, like, there's just because it's going to be in my house and it's going to be around other dogs, like, I just can't have an aggressive dog. I can't have a dog that has not a solid temperament. I always ask people where they get their dogs from.
Right.
Because I want to know, because I've seen a lot of dogs. You know, I might know something about that breeding or about the person that breeds those dogs. You know, maybe they breed dogs that have questionable temperaments, et cetera, et cetera. And I just won't take those dogs.
Well, and I'll tell you too, you're absolutely right. Fletch is a soft dog, which I appreciate. Four small kids at home. I don't want the thing, as Dave would say if he were here, doing parkour through the living room with human bowling pins stacked everywhere. But I took him this last weekend, I took him to a spot of mine that is notorious for just eating dogs alive. Mm-hmm. It is just steep, gnarly, rocky country. He was phenomenal.
Yeah.
And was disappointed at the end of the day when it's like, I got to get back in my kennel. This sucks.
Yeah.
So, night and day between yelping at Sage and now he's just chewing through country that eats dogs alive.
You know, I've taken dogs that, you know, you'll take out in the field and then after one bird or you make some kind of correction, they'll just run back to the truck. And I just don't like dogs like that. Like, I'm like, that dog doesn't want to hunt, or I had some sort of bad experience that I got to figure out what happened and kind of correct that to get them excited about hunting again. But there are dogs that quit, and I'm not going to say that there's not.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, a lot of these people, you know, they've had their dogs that I take that are 2 or 3 years old. Like, oh, can you get my dog to hunt? That's a little bit tougher of a hill to climb. Because the dog's pretty set in its ways, and it might have instinct and natural instinct to find birds, but how it chooses to process all that information and everything is just night and day difference.
What's the sweet spot for you as a trainer as far as age goes?
I like to take dogs that are about a year old.
About a year, okay.
Yeah, some people try to get me to take their puppies as soon as they get them, and I just don't think that has a point. I mean, I can tell you guys from experience that, you know, I have puppies, and I put them on birds when they're like 6 or 8 weeks old, and it doesn't make any difference. They're just like, oh, it's something to go chase, or
right.
If there's no advantage. On my website, you know, I tell people I take dogs usually after 6 months, like, have this puppy, enjoy this puppy for 6 months.
Right.
You know, and if it works out, let's figure out how to get it trained. But, you know, after a year, you need to start thinking about how you want it. You got to at least get it hunting so we can work with something. It's a little, you know, as they wait longer, it's harder to get that dog excited about something that it's not really familiar with.
Did I screw up, or do people screw up? I always do the thing like the kids have the fishing line with a chucker wing or a, you know, and like when they're a puppy, it's like, hey man, smell this. This is fun.
It's a really cool party trick because, well, basically you're just teaching your dog kind of sight point, which
is
one of Fletch's issues, right? Which
he likes
to sight point everything. You're not really teaching the dog how to find a bird or to smell a bird or what to do. All he's is like instinct. He sees it moving. He smells it. And then he locks up. And that's not really something you want to, like, that's in the real world of bird hunting. That's not, it never happens. Like
valid. Like, okay.
It's cool though. Like you get your friends over, you're like, watch my dog, watch my puppy point. He's amazing.
Yeah. I just want him to be, I want him to have that experience being a puppy with the kids. And I want to introduce an element that at least has some connection to what I want the dog to do eventually. So that's where I got.
Well, I mean, you have like all those Valley Quail in your house.
Yeah.
I mean, I tell people, like, man, go on a walk. Go on a walk where there's Valley Quail. Like, and then your dog figure those things out.
Way better idea.
Yeah, I mean, so much more fun, too.
Well, that's why you're the professional. Okay.
Like, yeah. Like, he'll sniff the ground. He'll smell those things. He'll be like, where are these things? He'll be, and then they'll flush, and they flush hard. You know, not every dog can handle a Valley Quail.
You know what he does now is he goes back down by that fence, tries to turn him up, and I watch him out there, and he'll lock up. Yeah. That was a better idea.
Yeah.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We have got one more segment to go. Do not go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Final segment of Nevada Backcountry on this Sunday. Sincere thank you to all the show sponsors and all of you that take time out of your day to listen to us. We're going to jump right in with a rapid fire session of questions.
Sure.
Aaron, I'm going to put you on the spot. What gives you the right? No, I'm kidding. what breed for Nevada? Somebody's looking for a dog. What's your knee jerk? What do you recommend?
You know, short hairs are super popular here because they have a shorter coat.
Okay.
You know, it's something you have to consider, and Brittany's are super popular here. I don't really know for Nevada. All the dogs I train find those chucker just fine.
Okay.
If, like, my personal preference for chucker hunting is having a dog with a shorter coat.
Yeah.
It gets super hot out there, and you have to carry a lot of water. Even now, I mean, it was like 60 degrees last weekend.
Yep.
I had like 6 liters of water on me.
Yeah.
You know, I find you don't have to carry as much water for a dog that has a shorter coat. And that's not to say that setters can't handle the heat. They can. I think any dog that is in shape physically can handle heat.
Okay.
And any dog that is not will struggle with that.
Yeah, the keg with legs thing.
Yes.
Yeah. Dew claws or no dew claws?
Dew claws.
Okay.
It's part of a tendon. Dogs need it. I would not clip it.
I gave Aaron knuckles on it. Yeah. So I've had both.
Mm-hmm.
No dew claws and dew claws. I'll share a quick story. Went back east hunting geese. Another lifetime. I worked in the hunting industry.
Sure.
Did a hunt out there with Tim Grounds, who everybody in waterfowl know. Anyway, he's got a story about losing a dog in a frozen river that didn't have dew claws, couldn't get up on the ice. So after that, a few other experiences, I don't care. I tell them, hey, leave them intact. I don't care.
No, it's beneficial to your dog.
Perfect. Shotgun for Nevada. Where are we going? What are you running?
I run a 410.
Yeah, buddy.
I like to make life difficult.
Yeah.
I just like it. It's an extra challenge for me, extra layer.
What got you going on 410s?
Yeah. So a friend of mine was hunting with a 410 a few years ago, and it was kind of like, he did it. Why can't I do it? And there was sort of a little bit of a competition there.
Okay.
And I was like, kind of threw down. I was like, well, you're not a good hunter if you can't hunt with a 410. And I was like, buddy.
I resemble that remark.
I was like, I will be a good hunter then. And I hunt exclusively with it. I enter competitions with it. I just like shooting it now. It's just natural to me.
Load with a 410 for Nevada.
Six.
Sixes?
Mm-hmm.
What are you, like half an ounce in there?
Yeah, you need at least half.
Okay. And that's what you shoot, like half or three quarters of an ounce of sixes the whole season?
Yeah, I shoot sixes at everything.
And you run no change in load weight or any of that? That's what you run all season. What about vest? We're going the gear
clear
here.
Funnel rise all the way.
Yeah.
I know Matt. He's a friend of mine.
The Summit XT.
Yeah. You know, back in the day when Wingworks used to make really good vests?
Yeah, I do remember. Yeah.
Now I think they're kind of special order. His vests remind me of those vests
mm-hmm.
the most. And I have a lot of vests. like I just used to be kind of this, I went through this gear. I think every one of us goes through like a gear stage.
Yep.
We're like, is it really that good? And when I first, ironically, my friend who challenged me with the 410 had told me about Final Rise vests like a few years ago when Matt first got started. And I heard the story about he and his wife, how they were sewing them in his living room and he was out of Utah. And
after he left Mountain Ops.
Yep. Yeah. After he left Mountain Ops. Yeah. Yep. And if you've been in the outdoor industry, you know Matt. So, and I have some contacts in the outdoor industry. So I was like, all right, I'll try a vest. And the thing just fit.
Yeah.
And I think that's just like, if it fits, man, you just wear it. And I just think they're super comfortable. He's always trying to innovate and he's just a super good guy. Like there are just, as you know, from being in the industry, there are some not so scrupulous people in the industry.
Oh, buddy.
Matt is one of the best people I've ever met.
Yeah.
So I can't recommend his vest.
Handsome dude too. So that's
a perk. Yeah, he's pretty buff too. Yeah.
I think we've all done it. I think I went from the Sportsman's Warehouse zip up special to a Filson strap vest to a Bucks bag was a thing for a while.
What about the mother's vest? I used to have a mother's vest.
Yep.
I can still have it in my closet somewhere.
Do you really? Yeah. I always hand them down, but from that, then Wings Works was the thing for a minute. And then, I've been using that Summit XT for however long. They're perfect. Yeah, absolutely. No, and I always tell people too, if you're hunting and you're thinking about your vest, it's the wrong vest. Like you should not, I'm not thinking about what I'm wearing while I'm out there. And that thing, I throw it on. And by the end of the day, it's like, oh yeah, I was wearing that all day. Perfect.
It's just designed in such a way I carry so much gear in my vest. I have like first aid kit, hemostats, water, bandages, tourniquets. I have extra clothes that I take. Sometimes I have food, you know, I just have so much of it and it all fits in there and I never think about it.
Yeah.
And I've never had an issue. I've actually had that. Because I remember one of the selling features was like you could unclip the bag and you can put it around your dog.
Right.
I've had to carry a dog out of the white.
Oh, you've actually used it?
Yeah.
Oh, and okay.
And it worked. And so, and this was like a number of years ago. I think it was just like 4 or 5 years ago, 4 years ago probably. Yeah, I had to carry a dog out of the white.
Ooh.
Out of that canyon. It was like a 4 mile hike out and he was a big Gordon setter.
Yeah.
And it was just too hot and he started getting woozy.
Oh, okay.
And I couldn't get him cooled down and I realized he wasn't going to make it out. So I was like, well, let's see if this thing works. And man, it, as advertised, it worked.
And knock on wood, I have not had to use it. Yeah. All right. As far as your electronics.
Garmin.
Garmin everything?
It's just so hard to get out of that Garmin ecosystem.
Yeah.
I mean, I have the watch. I have the training collars. I have the Alpha. I have the InReach in my Alpha. And the InReach is a huge selling point as a guy who goes chukar hunting solo all the time.
Right.
Like I need InReach. At least I think I need InReach. It's just hard to get out of that.
Yeah, I've shared it on the show before, but the experience that sold me on the InReach was being like 8 miles back in the Gila on an elk hunt with my dad years ago. And he was, I'm not knocking you, Dad, if you're listening, but he was in his late 60s at that point. And that is remote, vast country. Mm-hmm. Day one, he steps right over a rattlesnake. And that sold me. I went, you know, hopefully I never have to use this, but holy crap. That was a close call, and we would be hosed without that thing. So I'm like you. I chukar hunt a lot by myself, and I'm just like, you know, man, this is extra insurance.
It is. You can send texts on it.
Yep.
Like I've never had an issue with it.
Hey, word to the wise, though, as my $348 bill can attest, it's probably not best for casual conversation.
No, only emergencies only. I tell everybody. I have 15 texts a month.
Yep.
Like if you... Are you not dying? Don't text me.
Yes. I made that mistake on during elk season this year where it was like, oh, we're glassy. I'm going to fire up a text to my wife. And for some reason, I got it in my head that because I was using the Earthmate app.
Okay.
I can type out a full paragraph, you know. I'm not doing the hunt and peck on the little thing. Oh, crap. It was $348 when I got home and I went, ooh, buddy. So what handheld are you using? Are you doing the Alpha 100 or are you using?
No, the Garmin. It's a Garmin Pro 550.
Yeah. Okay. The Plus.
Yeah.
Same thing I use.
Yep.
I think that's all the information you need. As far as it gives me a distance direction, I'm good. It's got a little screen. I'm not trying to sort through layers. Let's see what else. Oh, I'm going to go trucks for a minute. Vehicles for Nevada and chukar hunting.
I have a Jeep.
Okay.
So
you got problems.
No.
Yeah.
I have a vehicle that can handle 35s and a locker so I can get back anywhere I need to go. But I also have a side-by-side, but I rarely use that. I've discovered with a side-by-side, it's kind of a hassle to get that thing out there.
Yep.
I thought it was going to be a lot easier, and it's a lot more effort.
Preferred tire brand for your truck?
I like BFGs.
Are you getting the They make that Kevlar sidewall one, right? Yeah. Is that what you're running?
Yeah, I have some MTs on my truck.
And I always ask, I like talking to guys like you who are out there way more than I am.
Sure.
I mean, it's just the nature of the beast. My 9 to 5 is here in the office doing radio stuff. So I'm a, man, if I can scoot out Friday and get Friday, Saturday, awesome. But that's just how I am. I'm a weekend warrior now. Gone are the days of being a college kid where I could sleep in the back of my truck, live on Red Bull and salami. And
I think I still do that.
Yeah. I've tried to be healthier as I get older and like, I'm going to fix a sandwich, but yeah, man, gas station beef jerky.
It's like protein bar. And
yeah, you're good to go. Contact information. How do people get in touch with you? Here you've talked this big game about the you don't want to grow. And yeah. Now I'm going to force you to plug the business now, Aaron.
I have a website. It's battlebornbirddogs.com. You guys can reach me there. I also have an Instagram page, Battleborn Bird Dogs, where I post up most of my hunting adventures and pictures of your dog are on there.
Yeah.
All my training dogs that I have in for training, I post up too.
When do you normally take dogs?
I start to take dogs at the end of February.
Okay.
Until June, the end of June. I think July and August is too hot to train bird dogs here in Nevada. I don't really see a value in that.
That's when I got in touch with you and you told me,
And then so September 1st, when bird season opens up again, is when I start taking dogs. And I'll take them usually till about November. So September, November, I'll take another batch of dogs. And then from November to the end of like January, I'm hunting.
Yeah.
So I don't want to really take a lot of dogs. It's going to kind of encroach upon my hunting.
You've got your own dogs.
Yes.
How many do you have?
I have 4.
And they are what type of?
I have a Gordon Setter. I have a Wirehair Pointer. I have an English Pointer. And I have a Vizsla.
Ooh, a Vizsla. You're a brave man.
No, man. Megatron's a stud.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That specific one, have you had?
No, man. When I used to field trial, when I got into horseback trials, it was all through the Vizsla world. I was horseback trialing Vizslas.
What I'm about to say is completely unbiased. I found Aaron through a friend of a friend. And man, I can't compliment you enough.
Oh, thanks.
It was a phenomenal experience having a dog trained by you. And the end result, what I got back, has been incredible. He's got house manners, phenomenal in the field. He makes his puppy bobbles like most dogs, for sure.
Yeah, he will.
I mean, just kudos to you. And I highly encourage people listening, man, if you've got a dog or planning on getting a dog, I would highly recommend Aaron at Battleborn Bird Dogs. Thank you so much for doing the show with me, man.
Yeah.